Hey friends, welcome back to Burnout and Breakthroughs. I'm Samantha and I am so glad that you are here. This is our little corner where we get real about nonprofit work, burnout, and the messy but beautiful process of finding our way back to ourselves. If you listen to episode one, The Breaking Point and the Shift, you'll remember that I shared that moment when burnout stopped being just a whisper in the back of my head and became this undeniable truth. That episode was short and raw because honestly, that is what burnout feels like. Shortness of breath, raw edges, and really no energy for more. I intentionally posted the episode on National Nonprofit Day, and today I wanted to expand. It feels right to hold both truths in the same hand and in the same space, honoring both the incredible work and the incredible people who give so much of themselves, while also refusing to honor that burnout that often gets wrapped up around us like barbed wire. Before we really get into it today, I want to invite you to pause with me for just a moment. Take a deep breath in and let it go. If you're anything like me, you probably don't take enough time each day to take a breath. And honestly, sometimes even that single inhale, pause, and exhale feels like a radical act. In the spaces within which we work, nonprofits, schools, caregiving, activism, we often are in constant go mode, and we forget to stop and breathe. We need to take a moment to ground ourselves, especially during times when we feel like we're falling behind. The constant pushing and nonstop grind is exactly what's driving so many of us into burnout. And it's why today's conversation really matters. Burnout has been dressed up and sold to us as a badge of honor and proof that we care enough, that we're working hard enough, and that we're committed. But friends, we need to change our way of thinking and stop letting exhaustion become a trophy. Just as depletion is not devotion, burnout is not passion. So today we're going to unpack this myth together. We will talk about how burnout has become a part of nonprofit culture, why it gets normalized and celebrated, and what it looks like when it shows up in our own bodies and minds. Most importantly, we'll start imagining another way forward. Today, we are going to stay with that thread, but look at the myth that I think every nonprofit worker, teacher, activist, and caregivers have felt. The idea that burnout is somehow proof of your passion. The more exhausted you are, the more committed you must be. I want to flip that narrative because burnout is not a sign of passion. It is the result of signals from our bodies that were just stuffed down or ignored. The World Health Organization, the WHO, have stated that burnout is a syndrome conceptualized as resulting from chronic workplace stress that has not been successfully managed. It's characterized by three dimensions: feelings of energy depletion or exhaustion, an increased mental distance from one's job, and feelings of negativism or cynicism related to your job and having a reduced professional efficacy. So according to the WHO, burnout is a distinct occupational phenomenon rather than a medical condition. While it's not recognized as a medical condition, I think it's imperative to recognize the reported evidence of the links between persistent clinical burnout and insomnia, cardiovascular disease, and metabolic disorders. Additionally, the chronic stress that causes the burnout can manifest as physical ailments, such as headaches, gastrointestinal issues, anxiety and depression, all result in a reduced quality of life. All of these are warning signals. They are the body's smoke alarm that's going off, and the sooner that we stop treating burnout like a badge of honor, the sooner that we can start healing ourselves. So by this point, we know that burnout isn't something that just happens, but many of us have either experienced it, been witness to it, have seen multiple coworkers who have gone through it, or it kind of has become a part of the job description. So if you think about some of the most common phrases that are heard in these spaces, such as do more with less, the mission comes first, think about who you're helping, or, you know, my personal favorite, we wear many hats. They are all usually code for congratulations. You now have the job of three people, but the salary of one. Sure, the phrases on the surface have been used so much that they have kind of become a commonplace buzzword that present as noble sacrifices. They are intended to give a sense of solidarity, or that we are all in this scrappy underdog story together. But if you dig into it a little bit deeper, it's really martyrdom dressed up as dedication. I have come to equate these phrases with the thought that if you're not exhausted, maybe you're not doing enough. This isn't just me expressing my frustrations. The Stanford Social Innovation Review published an article in 2021 that highlights how nonprofit workers are not only stressed and burnt out, but they're leaving the sector in waves. The National Council of Nonprofits have called it a full-on workforce shortage crisis. That isn't because people are suddenly stopped caring about the work that they're doing and they decided to leave. It's because the culture made staying unsustainable. When we normalize burnout, we are really celebrating the harm that's being done. We are clapping for smoke instead of asking, where's the fire? Once burnout becomes ingrained in the culture, it stops looking like a problem and it starts looking like the standard. So let's bring all of this a little bit closer to home. How do you know that you're not just tired or sick, but you're burnt out? For me, it showed up in layers. There were emotional, mental, and physical signs and symptoms that I began experiencing that I didn't take notice of, and I wish I had noticed it sooner. Emotionally, I was feeling numb, like I cared for my clients and my employees, but I couldn't feel that caring anymore. I am a very empathetic person, and this felt like my empathy was just basically running on autopilot. Once I realized that this was happening, the guilt came on heavy. Like, how dare I not feel more for these clients who are trusting me with their stories and trusting me to help them? You know, in hindsight, I know now that thought pattern is and was a very dangerous one that I had incorporated into a lot of aspects of my life. And throughout continued work and therapy, I have been able to shift those thought patterns and shift those patterns of guilt into a more sustainable and caring method. But it's taken a long time. And this is something that I have to be consciously aware of. Mentally, my burnout was causing overwhelm, anxiety, depression, and I had this mental fog that would come across at any time that I looked at my computer screen and all of a sudden realizing that I'd been looking at the same line of text of an email and not processing anything of what it had said. At the worst of my burnout, I was experiencing panic attacks, and they would come up pretty frequently. I've been sent to the emergency room twice with panic attacks because they were so bad that I legitimately thought that I was dying. And this last one that I had, my last real big panic attack, made me realize that my burnout was being caused by things that were happening. So, for example, this situation, I was in a one-on-one coaching session with one of my employees, and with it being the end of the grant cycle, we were not lucky enough to get another one from the federal government for this next year, this next grant cycle. So unfortunately, we have to lay people off. And we've been giving our teams the news a few months in advance, like this was going to happen. We wanted to prepare the teams ahead of time. I was bringing in other people in my network that had positions open that were very similar to what we were currently doing. And I was doing everything that I could to make sure that my team had opportunities available to them. And, you know, I had done this for them and given them the notice that this was going to be happening. And every week during my one-on-one sessions with my employees, I was getting questions and fielding questions of, you know, why can't I stay? Or do you know who you're laying off yet? Or one of the biggest ones that I was getting was, I love this job too much. You can't let me go. You can't just let me go. My team thought that I had some divine power to change the realities of the grant end, and I didn't. This last coaching session was filled with questions like this, and it took up the entire meeting, and not getting to the agenda items at all, even though I was trying at the time to redirect, somehow it always got turned back to those, you know, why can't you let me stay? You know, what, I'm going to be buying a house. I can't have this job taken out from me, from under my feet. And when I ended the virtual meeting, I was instantly thrown into a full-blown panic attack. And I struggled using every method that I had to overcome it. So for 2 hours, I was crying. I was shaking. I was fearing that this pain in my chest was going to be the last thing I would ever feel. And living alone, no one would find me if something happened. I spiraled out of control, and I finally called up my doctor, and thankfully they were able to get me in that day, which avoided me having to go to yet another expensive trip to the emergency room. And my doctor met with me, and she was able to put my mind at ease, gave me an EKG just to, you know, give me that ease of mind that, you know, my heart was okay. I was okay. I was just having a panic attack. So they were able to calm me down. And I do have generalized anxiety disorder, and I had never been medicated for it. And now, because of this most recent panic attack, she really pushed to have me go on to some anti-anxiety medication. My burnout had affected me so severely that I had to have medical intervention to alleviate some of the worst symptoms. And now on the physical side of things, I was absolutely wiped out. I was regularly getting migraines. I had extreme changes in my appetite where some days I would be so hungry, nothing I ate was satisfying me. And then other days I had no appetite and I couldn't even think about eating. I also had bouts of, you know, different aches and pains that would flare up, and IBS symptoms pretty regularly. My sleep was greatly impacted. I had sleep that had become so irregular that I couldn't fall asleep until super late. And then my body just wakes up super early around 6 or 7 a.m. and I couldn't go back to sleep. So I was wearing a Garmin watch that tells me if my sleep was poor or my stress levels were high overnight. And my stress levels overnight never lowered enough to let my body get into a state of full relaxation in order to recover. This tells me that my cortisol levels were just skyrocketed. And this is something that I am still working on. I have met with my doctor to see if we can check my cortisol levels just to be on the safe side. But it is just wild to me how much your body keeps the score, even when your mind is trying so desperately to push through. Now, if you have been working with a therapist or if you're within the realm, you may have heard about the 2014 book by Bessel van der Kolk, The Body Keeps a Score: Brain, Mind, and Body in the Healing of Trauma. The book focuses on the central role of the attachment system and the social environment to protect against developing trauma and related disorders. And when trauma does occur, he discusses the effects and the possible forms of healing, including EMDR and limbic system therapy. This was one of the books that my therapist had suggested to me during the height of my burnout and the start of my healing journey. And there's a quote in there that has stuck with me and is among many, but is probably one of the most relevant to our current discussion. It is, "In order to change, people need to become aware of their sensations and the way that their bodies interact with the world around them. Physical self-awareness is the first step in releasing the tyranny of the past." This quote was so poignant for me at the time because I realized that I was completely cutting off the sensations and signals from my body to my brain. Every time I was in therapy and I was asked, "Where do you feel that emotion in your body?" I struggled. And sometimes I still do today. It's something that I'm still working on. But I struggled to answer it because I didn't know. I had no semblance of what sensations I was feeling. The only sensation that I had regularly that I knew of were those that were painful, and I came to realize that that pain that I was feeling was the extreme reaction that my body had to give me to make me pay attention. If you haven't read the book, I highly recommend it. If you don't have time to read, it actually is on Spotify as an audio book. If you have Spotify Premium, you can go ahead and listen to it, or you can find the audiobook wherever you listen to that stuff. But I highly, highly recommend it. And all of these symptoms, mental, physical, emotional, I really thought could be solved with rest, but I really couldn't rest. I would feel so guilty if on a Sunday, for example, I didn't do anything all day and I sat on the couch watching a show or reading. If I didn't do something that would have been seen as productive, I didn't feel like I deserved to rest. There is a lot more there to unpack, I'm sure, than just burnout. And yes, I am working on it. But in the end, rest just was not enough to fix it. When I realized I was becoming burnt out and I started talking about it or making comments like, "I can't take it anymore," or "I'm this close to walking away," I would get people who would minimize my feelings. I would hear things like, "Just take a day off," or "a long weekend." I'd also hear, "You're strong, you got this, you'll get through it, you're doing a good job, this is just sometimes a part of it. You know, we need you, you'll be okay." And yeah, they kind of sound well-meaning in a way, but it wasn't recognizing the problem that I was facing or how I was feeling. I felt like I was being dismissed, that my experiences were not being acknowledged. There is a study in the Journal of Occupational Health Psychology from earlier this year in 2025 that called it the cost of compassion. So nonprofit workers were burning out not just because of workload, but because of the constant expectation to perform emotional labor, all while people around them told them that they were quote-unquote heroes for it. Talk about pressure, right? And, you know, I was internalizing those messages. I was internalizing, "You're doing a good job. Just take an extra day off." I was looking at my coworkers and seeing a surface level masking. And I thought, why is it that everyone else but me is able to handle this? What are they doing better than what I am doing? So what did I do to crawl out of this spiral of burnout? Honestly, the first act of resistance was naming it, saying to myself out loud that this is burnout and this is not normal was the start. And then from there, I started working on incorporating tiny boundaries. I stopped checking and sending emails at 7 p.m. during lunchtime. Even though I work primarily from home, I was stepping away from my desk and I was actually going to the kitchen and having my meal in a completely different space so that I wouldn't look at my computer or I didn't bring my work phone with me during that time. The small things start to add up, and it helped me to realize how to put up boundaries, and it helped me put up a boundary that I didn't think I was going to be able to do. I emailed my team after that initial panic attack, and I told them that I could no longer handle the emotional labor that they were putting on me, asking every week what was going to happen when the grant ended. I was caring, absolutely, but I was firm in stating that we needed to focus on what we could do moving forward for our clients, and that each meeting that I was going to be having with them would be to discuss their caseloads and discuss any issues that they were having with their clients. We were no longer going to take our one-on-one sessions as primarily discussions around what was going to happen because I couldn't do it anymore. I thankfully have a wonderful team that 100% respected what I said, and it hasn't happened in multiple weeks, which I'm extremely thankful for. The other thing I started to do was I started to reclaim rest, and I reframed it as a right instead of a reward. That meant that I was working on not feeling guilty on the weekends when I chose to do something that I wanted to do over something that I quote unquote should do. It also meant journaling when I felt stuck, or using my voice note on my phone to get my thoughts out of my head. There is something that happens that helps to provide me with a clarity when I say the things out loud. It also meant going to therapy and not feeling like I was wasting my therapist's time. Oh yeah, I've definitely had that conversation with her, and I was very lovingly put in my place that I was not wasting her time. I had to let go of perfection, and let me tell you what, as the queen of over-responsibility and taking on more than what my plate could carry, this was probably, and it still is, the hardest thing to overcome. If somebody dropped the ball on my team beforehand, I would have swooped in, fixed it before it became a problem. Healing my perfectionism means, for me, asking myself, what if I just didn't? And realizing that when others were making the mistakes and I was swooping in to fix it, I was robbing them of a huge learning opportunity because they couldn't learn from their own failure. It was a really hard realization because as somebody who cares a lot for people and a lot for my team and my clients, I had to have the hard conversation with myself that even though it is well-meaning and I wanted to help or protect somebody, I was essentially causing more harm than I was good. And I learned that the world wouldn't fall apart if I just didn't. I think all of this was a form of recalibrating my emotional brain. Schwartz and Pines, in their handbook on preventing burnout, actually emphasizes that organizational change is critical, but personal strategies such as peer support, spiritual grounding, and therapy matter as well. It isn't an either or, it's a both. So before we close out this week, I want to give you a reflection. If you're listening on your commute, you can mull it over while you're driving. If you are home, maybe just jot it down. But I want you to think about what signs that burnout is showing up for you in your life right now. Where have you been praised for your pain? And what would it mean to take that badge off for one day? You are already valuable. You don't need that badge of burnout to prove your value. So this is where we're going to land for the week. You don't need to earn your worth through suffering. Burnout is not proof of passion or strength. It's not a badge of honor. Next week, we are going to dig into the myth of the selfless servant, why boundaries matter. So we discussed boundaries a little bit today, but we're going to really dig into it next week. So if today felt like a bit of a gut check, next week is going to be the toolkit to help you. If this episode resonated, hit subscribe, share it with somebody who might need to hear it, and maybe even reflect out loud with a friend or a coworker. Naming this stuff together is how we start to change things. Thanks for spending time with me. Remember, burnout isn't your fault, but healing is possible. I'll see you next week.